Chapter 26. The tunnel shakes like it's about to come down around them. With a sound of alarm, Shmi ducks, hands going up to cover the back of her head as she flattens herself against the wall, in the automatic motion of someone who's been in a cave-in before. Fives lunges to follow, heart in his throat, and throws himself over her, only belatedly remembering that he doesn't have a handy layer of plastoid over his spine right now. Even so, he stays where he is, braced for impact, until the rumble and rain of dust dies away as suddenly as it appeared. There's a long moment of tense silence before Fives pushes away from the stone, taking a quick step back. He looks around, but the torches are still lit, and there's no visible damage that he can see anywhere in their tunnel. Which means whatever happened was somewhere else. And that means the odds of General Windu and Commander Cody being involved are pretty much astronomical. The fact that there even was some kind of cave-in or something means that they're probably in trouble, though, and that's not overly promising. "Is this cave system unstable?" Shmi asks, mouth tight. She carefully pushes upright, looking like she's waiting for it to all come down on top of her, and then asks, "How far down is your general?" "I have no idea," Five says. He's been saying a bit too much these last few days. Fervently, impossibly, he wishes Echo was around, because even leaving the regs aside, Echo's good at plans. He can figure out what needs to be done and put the pieces together. "Down, somewhere. I know I need to help him." Shmi looks him over for a long moment, and her dark eyes are thoughtful. "That sounds crazy," Fives mutters. "Yeah, believe me, I know." Shmi chuckles, soft like she's wary of the sound. "I was going to say, like someone else I know," she says. "My son would get feelings sometimes. Things always went better when he listened to them." Something too much like horror flares, and Fives catches his breath. "You have a kid?" he asks, alarmed. "Here? Can I help you find him? Do you need to look for him?" An old, tired sort of sadness fills Shmi. And just for a moment, it's all Fives can feel. It aches, right down to his bones. And it's a worn thing, sanded down to a glass-thin edge that cuts all the deeper for it. Shmi doesn't look away, just raises her chin, squares her shoulders as much as she can. "No," she says softly. "He left a very long time ago, to become something better, to have something more than I could give him." Five swallows against the grief that isn't his, takes a breath. "It would be really helpful to have an actual Jedi around right now," he thinks, but forges on through it and says honestly, "I'm sorry." "I'm not," Shmi says, all steel beneath her grace. She smiles, touching Five's arm as she passes, but keeps moving down the tunnel. "I did what was best for my son, and I've never regretted it." Fives follows her, trying to translate the tangle of emotions in his head into words. "That doesn't mean it doesn't hurt," he says after a moment. Shmi inclines her head. "No," she agrees. "But it means it's worth it." There's something about her that Fives can't figure out. They're in the middle of a Sith planet, and he's seen the zombies, heard about General Skywalker's encounter with the ghost of a dead friend, seen the diplomatic ship and the brainwashed guards, and knows that everything here is dangerous, And yet, Shmi feels like General Windu does. Steady, set, strong, but bright, in a way that Fives doesn't quite have words for. The way General T felt back on Kamino when they went to see her about changing squads. Like a river, maybe, with a glass calm surface that hides just how deep it is. Fives has no idea if that sense is the Force or if it's just people being really exceptionally calm and in control of themselves. Maybe some of both, honestly. I didn't know the Republic had a standing army, Shmi says without looking back. She skirts a branching corridor like there's something hiding in the shadows that's about to grab her, so Fives gives it the same berth, eyeing the lack of torchlight within warily. The words are strange enough to keep his attention, though, and he eyes the line of her back, the steady care of her steps as she moves. It's a pretty new thing. You're not from a Republic planet, are you? She says the Republic like it's something distant, more a concept than a reality. And though the Republic's reach can be vague in the depths of the Outer Rim, most people there still consider themselves a part of it. Shmi pauses, like she's debating her response, but after a minute she allows. No, from outside it. The Huts rule on my planet, and they don't like Republic interference. Fives wrinkles his nose. He's never dealt directly with the Huts, but he's heard plenty of stories from the rest of the 501st, and from the other battalions they've met on leave. Slavers, he mutters disgustedly. And Shmi smiles crookedly at him. Yes, she agrees, still steel. One of the more objectionable things about them. Glancing ahead again, she pauses, taking in the forking paths, then frowns. Oh. Five stops too, then carefully reaches up and pulls his helmet off, tucking it under his arm as he squints into the darkness. Both tunnels slope gently downward, so there's no easy way to rule one of them out, and both of them make his nerves prickle, like eyes on the back of his head, like Rishi Station just before Droidbait died. Fives doesn't grip his blaster, but maybe something in him wants to. Left, I think, he says, without any reason why he does. Shmi's frown deepens, just a little, and she folds her arms across her chest like she's cold. If you think it's best, she says, but it's clearly not even close to enthusiastic. Fives considers. You think right's better? He asks, curious, and she swallows but nods. It looks brighter that way, she says, though Fives can't see any difference between them. Maybe there are more torches. Right then, Fives agrees and steps forward to take the lead, listening carefully. All he can hear is their footsteps echoed back at them, though, and the brush of cloth, which isn't helping his nerves much. General Windu is down here somewhere, in enough trouble that Anakin and Fives both felt him disappear and a flicker right at the corner of his eye, a helmet, bright and unmarked, pacing him through the corridor. Fives wrenches around, heart in his throat, alarm beating a tattoo high up inside his chest. There's nothing behind him except Shmi, and she looks at him, wide-eyed, and takes a quick step back. Sorry, Fives manages through the strangling tension. I thought I saw something. I didn't, Shmi says, worried. She takes a step forward, lays a hand on his arm, and some of the breath knotted in Five's throat eases. Are you all right? Worried about General Windu, Five says, which is true enough. I think he's hurt. He's got the commander with him, but Windu is a Jedi, and if there's a threat he can't deal with, the odds of Cody being able to survive it are pretty slim. We'll find him, Shmi says. Soft, steady. Taking a breath, Fives nods, takes one more look around the flickering shadows of the tunnel, and keeps moving. He's just been thinking about Heavy a lot. That's why he thought he saw him. There's no other possible explanation for it. What are you doing all the way back here? Blitz asks, mouth curling in the start of a smirk. Finally escaped the general? Colt makes a rude gesture at him, quick and emphatic. Jealousy's showing, Vod, he retorts. Scoffing, Blitz elbows him hard in the ribs. If I'd won that card game, it would have been me tapped for guard duty, he says. Don't let your head get big, Colt. It won't fit in your helmet. About the fact that I beat you? Colt asks, amused. Not how it works, Blitz. You find those shinies? The relief that flickers across Blitz's face makes Colt regret the charade. Just a bit. Blitz has a soft spot for their trainees. Yeah, General Kolar found him dumped in a maintenance closet. He and General T both think it was Ventress, so we're lucky she didn't just kill them outright. Wanted to use them as hostages, maybe? Colt says, glancing around the bunk room. His own bed is in the corner untouched, but General T set him up a bed in her quarters, so he hasn't had much call to come back here these last few days. Havoc on his way back? He's trying to avoid Nala Se's temper tantrum over her office getting wrecked, so probably. Blitz sounds amused, but there's a slant to his mouth that's tired. He sits down on the edge of his bed, pulling off his armor, and asks, who's the new kid following the general around? Haven't seen a hairdo that fancy since Kix first got his hands on a razor. Colt snorts, leaning back against the wall, and fingers the jammer General Kolar pushed into his hands before they'd started the mission. He hadn't said anything, and Colt hadn't mentioned his plans, but Jedi. Maybe someday Colt will get used to them. Tup, he says. From one of the cadet squads. General T picked him out of the bunch like something was pulling her right to him. Says he's gonna be a Jedi just like her. Blitz drops one of his pauldrons. A brother? He repeats, eyes wide, pauses, clearly untangling the implications, and blows out a breath through his teeth. Criff, some guys get all the luck. Colt smirks, even though he'd thought something similar when he'd first heard. You want to be a Jedi, Blitz? Sit around meditating and negotiating all day? Blitz scoffs. Hell no, but I do want a lightsaber. You've seen what those things can do. Leaning back, he kicks off his boots, then settles against the wall, watching Colt. How's T able to tell? Jedi sense? Midichlorians, Colt says, grim. Long Necks wrote the test out of all their procedures, even though there'd definitely be a few of us with a high count in an army this big. For a moment, Blitz doesn't answer, expression twisted. Sounds like them, all right, he says, just before the door slides open. Havoc steps in, pulling his helmet off, and then hesitates, looking from Colt to Blitz. Heavy thoughts, Vode? He asks curiously. And nods to Colt. Colt nods back, then deliberately keys the door closed and locks it behind him. About to get heavier, apparently, Blitz says, eyes narrowed as he watches Colt. Colt activates the jammer, taking two steps forward to deliberately set it on the table in clear view. If you want out, say so now, he tells both of his fellow commanders, and settles down in one of the empty chairs. Havoc and Blitz exchange glances, but Havoc crosses the room to his own bunk, starting to strip off his armor. Not waiting for Twister, then, he asks. Twister's not a batchmate, Colt says. The facility's fourth commander is from a newer generation, and while it sits wrong to distrust a brother, Colt remembers how grim General Windu looked back on Coruscant. Colt or one of his batchmates, he'd said. No one else should stay with General T. With the chips in all the younger clones and the lack in Colt, it's easy to guess why. Havoc raises a brow. This can't be about the cadet General T adopted, he says, since he's walking around in plain view with a Padawan braid. Something else happened, Colt? The general is trying to work things out from her end, and Colt appreciates her efforts. Knows, immediate and unhesitating, to just what lengths Shaak Ti will go to keep all of their brothers safe. She's a good person, and she cares about them. Colt cares, too. And Colt knows just how far some people will go to keep a secret, especially the Long Necks. General T is a Jedi and she's strong, devastating in a fight, but she has faith in people. It's one of the things Colt likes best about her. How she tries to see the best, even when it's a danger to her personally. Leaving her alone with Tup itches like nails down his spine, but it's necessary right now. Tup's going to kill a Jedi. General T saw it. The chips are all wrapped up in this too. And Colt's got a suspicion as to just why all the newer batches are ending up with control chips in their brains. Someone, he says grimly, has got the Kamino and sticking control chips in the brains of all the clones that came after us. Blitz goes still, and Havoc's breath catches audibly. There's a moment of complete silence, and Colt watches the horror grow between them as the words settle. Control chips, Blitz repeats after a long moment. Control of what, exactly? Something that's different between us and the new batches, Havoc says, slow. I haven't noticed anything, though. That's what caught Colt's attention, too. He knows his batchmates, knows himself. There's no functional difference between them and the rest of the clones. Not in levels of aggression, not in intelligence, not in any sort of skill. So the chips target something different. And Colt has an idea as to what. Nala Se is going to need her office inspected once the repairs are done, he says, and pulls the bugs he swiped from the armory from his belt, scattering them in front of him. Whichever one of you gets tapped to do it, I say we leave a few of these around and find out. He hesitates, weighing what else he has to say, and then offers, General T felt something. The other day when she touched a clone, she was convinced he was going to kill a Jedi. Blitz hisses, anger flaring. Did you report it? He demands, rising to his feet. It could be her he's going to turn on. I know, Colt says sharply. Believe me, I tried to convince the general, but she said he hasn't done anything yet, and she thinks she can save him before he does. Havoc finishes for him, rueful. Jare Jetti, hasn't she saved enough of us? Colt remembers her sadness in the hall after speaking with Elles, remembers her comment about the names of the fallen and how she feels sending soldiers off. He doesn't consider himself any sort of soft, but hell. In that moment, Colt wished he could stop the whole war single-handedly, just to wipe the look off her face. Knowing the general, he says roughly, it won't be enough if she saves all of us. Blitz sighs, resigned, and scrubs a hand over his face. Slag, he mutters. No wonder you're not ticked about getting stuck on guard duty. It's General T, Havoc points out, faintly amused. No one would try to wriggle out of that. No one with scent, at least. He rubs a hand over his buzzed hair, then glances over at Colt again. You think the chips have something to do with a brother killing a Jedi? Colt nods curtly. No brother would otherwise, he says. But if someone's got a control chip in their head and they're told to shoot a Jedi? He thinks of Tup's face. Of General Kolar's quiet words to General T after Tup had fallen asleep. Good soldiers follow orders. And something in Colt had gone cold and still and vicious when he heard that. And if the Republic's not telling the Kaminoans to put chips in us, someone has to be. Blitz scowls, then crosses to pick up several of the bugs Colt laid on the table. Nala Se has to be the one in charge of it, Colt says in agreement. No one even sneezes in the science division without giving her a full report. And right now there's only one side of this war that'd benefit from troopers killing Jedi, Havoc concludes, and takes his own handful, weighs them in his hand for a moment, and then asks, does General T know about you telling us? Colt shakes his head. And he doesn't even feel guilty about it. She's got enough to deal with, and she's already told Jedi High Council. They'll work on it from their end, but if any sort of order goes out early, better to have a backup plan, Blitz says, grim. Colt tips his head in agreement, thinks of General T taking his helmet, careful, reverent. A helmet is a clone's face, far more than their actual face. It's the only thing they can make their own, and I will guard it with my life, she'd said, fully aware of the meaning. Colt doesn't want her to die for him, doesn't want her to die at all, but knowing that she would, well, she's a Jedi, she'd probably die for a lot of people. That doesn't make it any easier to breathe when she says things like that to him. You keep in touch with the rest of our batchmates, right? He asks Havoc, who's a distressingly friendly bastard. Havoc raises a brow. You want me to spread it? He asks, though it doesn't sound like he objects. Blitz makes a thoughtful sound. Makes sense, he says. We can keep it quiet. Get some medics in on things, too, if they can get the chips out of a couple of men. That'll at least give us a chance to get the Jedi somewhere safe while we deal with things. Maybe a couple of small squads in each battalion. Men who stick close to the Jedi normally. Any guards on the temples, Havoc says quietly, and brothers who are around the Padawans. Ice slides down Colt's spine, and he grimaces, rubbing his hands over his face. He saw the Kresh when he was in the Coruscant Temple. General T went down there to talk to a few of the younglings she'd found on missions, and they'd been so bright and happy and overjoyed to see her, perfectly trusting of Colt. The idea of a trooper not in control of himself walking in there with a blaster? Nausea settles like a rock, and Colt swallows hard against it. Sithing hells. They really need to start moving. The Jedi are already trying to save us, he says, flat, angry. Thinks of Shock's slim red hands pressed over the white of his helmet, fingers against the gray of his chosen markings, the way she held it, so careful, the press of her forehead against his, the skin-warm brush of the Akul tooth headdress that marked her as a warrior against his own brow. Breathes out, harsh, determined, and says, let's save them in return. Cody is going to murder his husband, gleefully. Mace! He shouts, but the wall of stone just bounces his voice back at him, and Cody lets out a harsh breath, not willing to try again. He doesn't want to distract Mace, pull his attention away from the Sith he's fighting. A Sith ghost! And Cody has faith in Mace as a Jedi, as a fighter, but how can anyone manage to fight something that's already dead? Frustrated, furious, Cody bangs a fist against the stone, realizes half a second later what a bad idea that is, as something shifts and pulls back. It's pitch black in the tunnel, not even a hint of light breaking through. Helmet lights would be really useful right now, but Cody's going to have to make do with what he has, which is one probably cursed Sith warblade, and the driving, desperate urge to grab Mace and shake him. With a low growl, Cody steps sideways to get a hand on the tunnel wall, then takes four careful steps backwards, trying to catch any hint of red or violet through the blockage. If there's a crack, though, he can't find it, and he should have known what Mace was going to do before he did it. Should have realized, because it's such a Jedi thing to do. But Mace was already in trouble seeing things, and Cody hadn't even considered that he'd throw Cody clear rather than saving himself. Not a mistake he's going to make again, Cody thinks grimly. If he listens, evens out his breath, he can hear the buzz of lightsabers colliding, muffled by the stone. Counts, trying to keep track of hits. And Mace was hit, left himself vulnerable for long enough to get Cody clear of the rocks. Mace is a fighter, an experienced Jedi, but how well can he even do when he's wounded, facing down a ghost? If Cody could just get back through. There's a hard thud against the stone, and the green blade of a lightsaber drives right through the rubble. Green, not violet or red. And Cody feels a grim, heavy surge of something like panic, channeled into fury. Jin! He shouts. Over here! Come and face me! There's a pause as Cody's heart pounds in his chest. Too long, stringing Cody's nerves tight. Then, deliberate, the stones tremble, and several part. Qui-Gon Jinn steps through the hole, giving Cody a half-second glimpse of Mace and the Sith locked together, then resettles the stone as though it never shifted. The soldier, he says, quietly amused, and the green of his lightsaber throws strange shadows across the tunnel. You've been very quick to defend Mace, despite how he keeps putting you in danger. Every muscle tense, Cody curls a hand around the hilt of the warblade, draws it from its sheath like the motion alone is a threat. Yeah, well, I signed up for it, he says shortly. And from what Anakin has said, Qui-Gon was a good enough Jedi to be on the High Council, except for how he kept bucking its rules. That doesn't say a lot for Cody's chances here, but like hell he's going to sit down and let Mace face down two ghosts by himself. Qui-Gon tips his head, and the fall of his graying hair catches the light of his blade. It makes Cody think of what Mace said before, about Qui-Gon finding a better match, and... well, Mace facing Qui-Gon the first time is all the proof Cody needs to know that there's something still there, whether it's friendship or not. And someone, anyone, using that against Mace makes anger bubble up in his chest. Surely here, far beyond the Republic's reach, you don't have to be a soldier, Qui-Gon says, like it's an offer. Cody snorts, calculating the distance between them. He'll probably get one swing in before Qui-Gon's lightsaber takes out his sword, so he's going to have to make it count. Assuming he can take out a ghost, of course. Just the fact that he's already out here instead of fighting Mace is a good start, though. I never signed up to be a soldier, he counters, smirking, levels the blade across his body, judging angles, and adds, offhand, but I did marry Mace. That counts as signing up, right? Surprise flickers across Qui-Gon's face, and he pulls back just slightly. Instantly, Cody takes the opening, throwing himself forward in one hard lunge. The lightsaber sweeps towards his head, but Cody twists, slides underneath it, and slams his shoulder into Qui-Gon's chest, using his bulk and his armor to tumble him back. In the same motion, he brings the warblade up, deflecting the green lightsaber, expecting sheared metal, a brutally shortened hilt, he can throw into Qui-Gon's face. With a scattering hiss, the lightsaber goes dead, the blade dissipating as it crashes through Cody's sword. And Qui-Gon's eyes go wide. Cortosis, Cody thinks, equally startled. But he doesn't allow himself to hesitate. Twists the sword, then tackles Qui-Gon, slamming him back into the wall of the tunnel with a crack of skull on stone. And Qui-Gon cries out, slumping, and disappears with a ripple of blue. Catching his breath, Cody straightens, then glances down at the warblade. Coated in cortosis, he thinks. Clearly, that Sith Lord he took it from had both money and taste. I think you just became my new favorite weapon, he tells it, already well able to picture Ventress's face the next time he gets stuck facing her. Not that it will make her harmless, but... Cody wants to punch her in the face just once for all the brothers she's killed. Shorting out her lightsaber should give him all the opportunity he needs. In the darkness, the scrape of rock is clear. Cody jerks around, raising the warblade as violet light cuts through the darkness. His breath catches, and even as the stones shift, he's moving. When Mace steps through, Cody catches his arm, getting his fingers on warm skin, and says, "What were you thinking?"
"That I like you in your current shape," Mace says dryly.
And there's a long slash in the shoulder of his shirt, scorched from a lightsaber, but Cody can't make out the state of the skin underneath it.
"And not needlessly crushed under several tons of stone."
Cody swallows hard. Mace tossed him out of the way, deliberately leaving himself open to do it. Would have taken on two tangible ghosts just to keep them away from Cody, even though he couldn't tell illusion from reality. "That's... you're going to give me a heart attack," he says. "Worse than Obi-Wan ever has." Mace gives him an unimpressed look.
"Dooku was an illusion, then?"
he asks, glancing back at the empty hall.
"Three Sith ghosts, then, as far as Mace knew."
Cody tells himself that he won't shake Mace, won't grab him and push him against the wall, and... "I didn't see Dooku. Jin's ghost vanished when I shorted out his lightsaber." When Mace raises a brow, Cody tips the warblade in explanation. "Cortosis."
"Valuable," Mace says, approving, and grimaces. "What are the chances you have Bacta with you?"
Cody shakes his head. "Kix has all of it," he says grimly.
"The Sith?" "Darth Nostrum," Mace says, like it's distasteful. "He vanished when I struck a killing blow. I doubt he's gone permanently, though."
"You know him?" Cody asks, surprised. Mace snorts.
"He talked about himself in third person," he says.
"Oh, that kind of asshole." Cody rolls his eyes, tightens his grip on Mace's arm, and takes a breath. "How bad?" he asks. There's a pause as Mace considers.
"Not terrible," Mace allows after a moment. "It's cauterized. My range of motion will be affected, though."
Cody wants to be mad that that's the kind of thing he's worried about, but they're in danger, and it's only logical to make sure he's aware of any hindrances. "Still, we should keep moving," he says, and lets his hand slip down into Mace's again. "Illusions?"
"Manageable now that you're touching me,"
Mace says, like Cody can't see the tension easing out of his shoulders just a little. Cody wishes desperately that there was a better way, that he could help more or do something permanent, but this will have to be fine for now. "Next time you toss me out of a fight, I'm going to start stealing all the covers," Cody threatens. "Forever." Mace's mouth curls, a warm shadow of a smile in the darkness.
"Understood," he says gravely. "I want to kiss you," Cody thinks, like a revelation,
and it jars through him with a silver shock, bright and wrenching across his nerves. "I was worried, and I want to kiss you because you're safe now and here." Mace doesn't pick up the thought, and Cody looks away, desperate to push the feeling down. Realizing he's attracted to his husband shouldn't be nearly this unsettling, he thinks, wry, and tries not to let the pace of his heart give him away in the darkness.